Welcome to GhostBiz here on the Nova Business Report. Every week, I'm Gary Strubel, and I get to chat to the finance guys to find out what's going on in the markets in and around Southern Africa. Ghost, let's start out with an interesting deal that was a cool story in your ghostmail.co.za. You can go check out those newsletters on a daily basis. But Suntime has concluded the deal for the short-term part of MultiChoice's insurance business called NMS Insurance Services. Now, MultiChoice in a world of pain for a lot of other reasons. But firstly, why does MultiChoice have an insurance business and how does Suntime get to pick it up?
Hi, Gary and the listeners. Yes, every week you are Gary Strubel. Sorry, I had to tease you there. I just thoroughly enjoyed that intro. Moving on to Suntime and Sanlam and MultiChoice. As you say, a few parties in this deal. So this actually goes back to last year when Sanlam announced that they would be taking 60% in MultiChoice's insurance business. Now, you've asked there why they even have an insurance business. It all comes down to distribution of products. So MultiChoice knows that if you're a MultiChoice subscriber, you have devices, right? You have to have a way of watching. You might have a decoder unless you're a streaming subscriber. You certainly have something that has a screen. And so they would like to then sell you insurance and hope that they have the ability to entice you because they can sell to you through that channel. They also sell life insurance on top of that, which I can only assume is aimed at people who do things like wait and see if Rory McIlroy wins the Masters. It's those sort of subscribers who clearly are at risk due to all of the additional stress that they're under. Jokes aside, it's a pretty good business, actually, and it's worth quite a lot of money, as evidenced by the fact that Sanlam put a deal together for a 1.2 billion rand upfront payment and 1.5 billion in potential earnouts, and that's for 60% of that business. Now, what's happened is when NMS was originally structured, there were obviously some clever people in the room because they went and did two different classes of shares, one that does the short-term insurance side and one that does the life insurance side. So this made it very easy for Sanlam to put the deal together and then say, hello, Suntime, who of course are essentially the same family. You come and take the short-term business and we will hand on to the life business. So that's exactly what's happened is Suntime is now coming after the fact. They've picked up the short-term business and there are now three parties at the table, all playing to their strengths, I guess. And for MultiChoice, what's really important is they unlocked a big chunk of upfront cash, which they desperately need based on recent announcements coming out of the group.
So let's look now at another company that we've been sort of following what's going on there a little bit on the show, but not really, and that's Remgro. Remgro are different to many companies on the JSE in that they're not an operating company. They don't actually operate a business. They own shares in other companies, so act effectively as an investment company. But you seem to be quite negative about not only what they're doing, but also linked into what African Rainbow Capital has done. So perhaps that's the broader question. Just give us a sense of how these investment companies work and your view on how they are currently performing as being a listed entity and a potential investment.
Yeah, Remgro is a great one to focus on because investment holding companies have been a feature of the JSE. And their exposures vary. You've got ones that have got lots of exposure to private companies, so something like Sadvest springs to mind. And then you've got the likes of Remgro, where historically they had large stakes in public companies, in other words, other listed companies. The market's gone quite cold on that because people rightly say, well, why should I go and pay the Remgro management team to sit there with a stake in another company that I can go and get myself? And so what's happened is you've seen an overarching trend where the discount to net asset value per share has widened effectively for companies that have a lot of exposure to other listed companies. And even for those who have exposure to private companies like Sadvest, there's still a substantial discount because the market, generally speaking, doesn't really love these structures. And you referenced African Rainbow Capital there. What we've seen at the moment is the management team of that business plus the major shareholder trying to effectively take it private at a significant discount to the intrinsic NAV per share, which is what they've been telling the market it's worth. Due to a bunch of technicalities, an independent expert has basically come out and said, yes, actually that offer, even though it's at a discount to NAV, that offer is fair to shareholders. So it really just takes the shine off the sector. It makes people wonder whether the NAV is actually even the right metric to look at. And Remgro came out with a capital markets day where they've basically put all the focus on their dividend. They've kind of said, we're very focused on growing our dividend. This is the way to measure us. This is very important to us. This is fundamental to our investment thesis. But then they also have a slide there that talks about how there's a big discount to the NAV and they can't really understand why. I mean, the obvious solution here is to do more share buybacks. If your share is trading at a big discount to what you believe it's worth, this is a textbook case for share buybacks rather than more dividends. Because the message you're sending to the market, if you're not doing buybacks at a big discount to NAV, is that you don't really believe in your NAV. And then when you layer on what's happened at African Rainbow Capital, it just tells an overarching, very concerning story about using iNAV as a valuation metric. Counter argument would be, well, if investors are more interested in cash, then actually Remgro should be focusing on the dividend. But I'm not entirely sure that's true. I still think, and I did a poll on X about this, and the answer came back as I expected. It was roughly 2/3 of respondents agreed with me or said that, you know, if they actually focused on buybacks rather than the dividend, it's likely that the Remgro share price would go up.
Bit of a quiet week, so let's take a bit of a detour and talk about a company that we talk more about for share trading than actual operating, and that's Lighthouse Properties. We did mention a few times Des De Beer snapping up shares left, right, and center, and of course that comes through in your Ghost Nibbles section because he is a director of that company. And two stories, he picked up another $7 million worth of shares yesterday, and then in today's articles, you mentioned a scrip dividend where he picked up an astounding amount of shares or astounding value of shares. Perhaps you can just explain what a scrip dividend is and what do you think is going on at Lighthouse Properties?
Des De Beer is always a feature of the director's dealings section, which is exactly why I name him, actually, because when I write daily in Ghostmail about director dealings, I normally just say, you know, the CEO of this company or the CFO of that company or a non-exec of whatever company has gone and bought some shares or sold some shares. But with Des, it is just so consistently him doing it. And actually, the counter or the other point here is that it's often not any other Lighthouse directors. It's typically just him. Occasionally, you see some other stuff. So that's why I name him each time. And he does just buy up shares basically all the time, unless the company's in a closed period, which is essentially the period from the end of a financial reporting period until that report is actually released, then the directors are not allowed to buy shares. But outside of that, he's a very keen buyer of the shares. And then when it's scrip dividend time, which is something we see very often at Lighthouse, then he pretty much ticks the scrip box and then picks up a whole lot more shares. So essentially, a scrip dividend is just a way for a listed company to hang on to cash. Instead of paying a cash dividend, they go and issue more shares and they do it as scrip, which is basically like a miniature rights offer, if you think about it. You're basically saying to all your shareholders, hey, you know, instead of getting a cash dividend, we'd like to issue some more shares. Would you like to receive shares or do you really, really want the cash? And of course, you hope that shareholders will say, yes, give me more shares, because then it allows the property fund, and they normally use a scrip dividend, to actually hang on to more cash that they can then use to go and do transactions out there. And you see this benefit coming through to someone like Des. He has such a massive shareholding that just his scrip dividend alone is tens of millions of rands worth of shares. It's actually quite incredible to contemplate that kind of balance sheet.
Now, Ghost, a question about the Namibian Stock Exchange. We saw a new listing last week at an investment summit that we were involved in at the coast, a company called Corex Copper. A second listing from an operator called Haya Dawn, but it's a dual-listed investment. Its primary listing is on the Canadian Stock Exchange and then the dual listing on the Namibian Stock Exchange. Not sure if you have any background on those particular sorts of listings, but perhaps it's useful to just spend a second explaining the nature of a dual listing. How do you get to trade shares in different currencies on different markets?
Yeah, dual listings are incredibly interesting, and it really comes down to the fact that different stock exchanges have different strengths and weaknesses. So, for example, if you're in the technology sector, then something like the NASDAQ is where you would want to be because that's where all the big names are. So that's where investors look for technology opportunities, and it's just a very natural fit. Similarly, in the mining industry, there are exchanges that are stronger and exchanges that are weaker. And a lot of it comes down to where you'll find a lot of traditional mining activity. So I don't know too much about Corex. It's not something that's really been on my radar because they're not on the JSE. But based on the name, it certainly sounds like it's a copper business. So I'm guessing they might have exposure to a place like Zambia. It's a pretty common choice at the moment or something that you'll certainly see on the market. And so by adding a listing in Namibia, they are tapping into an African investor base. The fact that they are also listed, I think you said, in Canada doesn't surprise me because the Canadian market is full of junior mining companies. Another good example just like that is Australia. Also, lots and lots of junior mining companies there. And you'll often find these mining houses will have listings on more than one exchange because they simply want to access the broadest range of investors that they possibly can to maximize their chances of raising capital. So by choosing Namibia, it's actually quite interesting because it's common monetary area with South Africa. It's actually not that difficult to get South African institutions to be willing to invest, and perhaps they get a lower cost listing and it's more efficient on Namibia rather than the JSE. That I'm sure would have been one of the reasons for that. But yeah, very good one to put on the radar. I would imagine that you need to look out for capital raising activity from them over time, because that's typically a feature of junior mining.
All right, guys, we'll release you to wander off. Thank you. Lovely to chat to you as always and hear your thoughts on a range of different things. Next week, a busier week, I'm sure. We'll chat to you then on GhostBiz. Join us on the Business Report every week for a wide roundup of things. But on this feature, we focus on the equities markets. And you can catch a repeat of this broadcast and all of our previous segments wherever you pick up your podcasts, on Spotify, Apple, or Android. Just go along, like and subscribe. It really helps us deliver content. We'll see you next week on GhostBiz.